When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Unofficial Bengals Podcast.
Welcome to the Unofficial Bengals Podcast. This is your host, Frank LaPlaca, and I'm a Bengals fan for life. All right, this episode is going to be a review of the playoff win against the Ravens and a preview of the upcoming playoff game against the Buffalo Bills. And Tom McLeavy's also going to stop by for another McLeavy Minute.
What's up, Bengal Nation? This is Adrian the Mad Backer Ross, and you're listening to the Unofficial Bengals Podcast. Hooday!
Cincinnati Bengals fans, I would like to introduce Frank LaPlaca.
The NFL playoffs are rough. We've seen that. It doesn't matter who's playing who. One or two plays can make the difference between moving on or going home. So it doesn't matter if we blow out the Ravens or win by one score. We won the game, and the Cincinnati Bengals are moving on. All right, so let's quickly go over some headlines. The biggest headline of the week for me was Joe Burrow's comments during an interview, and he says this: "My plan is to be here my whole career, and hopefully Zach is here my whole career." And he goes on to compliment the organization, the front office, what they do in the draft, what they do in the offseason, free agency. And then he also says this, which if you take out of context could be a little foreshadowing for the future, and almost telling the organization, hey, I know you got my back. Or maybe it's just a general comment saying how much confidence he has in the organization. But Joe Burrow goes on to say this: "I have a lot of confidence in the front office doing their jobs in the offseason." Now, of course, he means attaining new players and drafting well. But I think he might also mean taking care of him and giving him the best contract out there for quarterbacks, because he's a winner and he deserves it. What we have here is Joe Burrow telling the organization, I want to come back for the long haul. We're not even done with the season yet. And then you have a team like the Packers where it's like, all right, you know, we're going to let Aaron decide and take his time and make whatever decision he wants. It's just such a different direction for both organizations. When you have your superstar player on board and believing in the future and wanting to be here, that's a huge advantage to your organization, as opposed to, I don't know, is this guy going to be here next year? Are we going to trade him? Is he going to retire? Does he want to be here? It's just such a great spot for us to be in. And Joe Burrow just continues to do it on all levels. Yes, I keep saying this during the podcast, but think about his play on the field and think about his leadership. And then he comes off the field and says things like this, which makes him endearing to the fan base. And it gives the organization a vote of confidence. And now, you know, none of us are thinking, oh, are we going to re-sign Joe Burrow? We all know he's going to come back. And he has a lot of pride in Ohio, and that's another big thing. I think he just wants to do it here. This is where he's from, and he wants to show the world that Ohio is a hotbed of football, which it is, and that the Cincinnati Bengals are going to be a perennial front-runner, champion, great team. And with him around, that's going to be the case. All right, the other big headline coming out of this week is the unfortunate injury to Jonah Williams. Now, he was already playing with a compromised knee and a dislocated kneecap, and what happens? He gets bull rushed, his leg gets turned the wrong way, all of his force goes on it, you know, you're on turf, and the next thing you know, his other kneecap is dislocated. So he's in pretty bad shape on both legs. We don't know what we're going to get out of Jonah for the rest of the postseason and moving forward. So as of now, Jackson Carman is going to take his place at left tackle. Now, when you think about it, last year we had Carman and Adeniji both rotating and battling for that right guard spot. This year, we kick them both out to tackles. And to be honest with you, that's their more natural position in both cases. We're seeing it with Adeniji. He's doing way better on the outside, where he can use his athleticism and footwork, as opposed to being on the inside, where he needs to be a grinder. And hopefully, we're going to see the same thing out of Carman. Now, Carman's a very strong athlete, and he has good movement skills. He struggled as a guard. Let's not lie. We don't know what's going to happen to him as a tackle. You know, maturity is a little bit of an issue with him. but you just want to see him become the pro that he's surrounded with. You know, you think of guys like Jesse Bates and Joe Burrow and just everybody, the way those guys carry themselves. I think Jackson Carman can do himself a service by saying, wow, this is the way these guys do it. And hopefully moving back to his natural position of left tackle is going to help, because there's not really much reinforcements coming. There's no one on the street. You know, Quentin Spain gets tossed around, but I mean, if the Bengals wanted him, they could have signed him 5 months ago, and they obviously do not want him back on the roster, so they don't feel like he's an improvement over anything they have. I know we're tossing around the name Andrew Whitworth, and, you know, that would be phenomenal, but we're going to have to roll with Jackson Carman. I mean, who do you have on the bench? Isaiah Prince? He's not any kind of upgrade over Adeniji or Carman. Deontay Smith, you know, he's kind of in on that same level, so we have a couple guys that we could rotate in there. Joe took 4 sacks this game and a lot of hits and a lot of pressure. I was getting deja vu and PTSD, whatever you want to call it, from last postseason, because you remember every play was a jailbreak. He was running for his life. He was getting sacked at record numbers in the postseason, and he still performed. And I'm hoping that this year, even though now we're down to 2 starting offensive linemen, you know, of the 5 that we rolled in with, we only have 2 left, and one's a rookie. And one is a veteran center who's been playing phenomenally for us. But aside from that, you have the 3 new guys coming in. You have a couple guys on the bench that can kind of rotate with those guys. And we're going to have to roll with it. I just hope it's not the same thing for the rest of the postseason. We're against the Bills. You know, Burrow's on the ground 15 times. And you know, I'm optimistic about the Bengals. But I care about it so much that, like, any little thing that can go wrong, you start obsessing over. So it's been getting in my head, like, oh, is this going to be the same as last year? Is this going to be the same as last year? Is there going to be a heartbreak in the Super Bowl because protection breaks down or whatnot? But I guess I can't think about that right now. We have just won a playoff game. We have 2 more playoff games to win, and then we can go to the Super Bowl, and we can worry about all that stuff as it comes. But for this week, it's going to be a tough task with that Buffalo Bills defensive line. They're stout. They're stout in the middle. So you're going to have Sharping against Oliver and Jones. I mean, those are 2 pretty heavy-duty interior linemen. They're going to be testing Jackson Carman. They're going to be testing Akeem Adeniji. So we're going to have to go with that quick passing game that we did this game. Joe was getting the ball out of his hands very quickly. He's very good at that. You know, they say the old point guard thing. So unfortunately, that's the game that we're going to be playing for the rest of the postseason. But with the talent that we have on defense, the skill positions, Joe Burrow, coaching, all those things, I'm hoping that they overcome the fact that our offensive line is yet again compromised. And what do? It's too early to talk about the offseason, but I mean, we signed 3 linemen, we drafted another. The year before, we drafted a couple. I mean, we're doing everything we can. I guess you're going to go into this offseason and try to sign another marquee and try to draft another one in the first couple rounds. I mean, you can't have enough offensive linemen. We're seeing that. And it was a position of need. We addressed it, and now that position's lean again. We're going to have to address it again because Lyle Collins is not going to be back until mid-season next year. Kappa, I'm sure he'll be back for the beginning, but we have a couple holes to fill. And if the backups can't perform this year up to expectations, we're going to have to start thinking about those backup positions as well. But let's get off that. I don't want to talk about the draft and free agency. I want to talk about the playoffs and where we're going from here. Couple other pieces of news. Coach Taylor gave out another game ball at one of the local Cincinnati bar restaurants, which is always cool. I mean, the head coach is going in and bonding with the fans and celebrating the fact that the fans have been such an edge, and they did it again. This game, the fans were going crazy. We are really creating that home field advantage in Cincinnati. And Sam Hubbard, with one of the biggest plays in Bengals history, we'll review that when we go over the game, but he set a couple playoff records. I think one was the longest fumble return in a playoff game, and I just can't believe that that play happened like that. And the last headline I wanted to go over is, I was thinking about Coach Anarumo, and you know he's going to get head coaching offers, and it just seems like that in the NFL. If you're an assistant or a coordinator and you get a head coaching position, you leave and go to it, right? Because who wants to be vice president their whole life? Everyone wants to be president, especially these alpha coaches that have been at it for so long and put so much of their life and time into it. I get it. Everyone wants to be a head coach. But when you have a team like the Cincinnati Bengals with a Super Bowl window that's open right now, you want to keep everybody there. Yeah, Coach Anarumo, it would be great to go be the head coach, right? Oh, you're going to go to Denver. I'm just naming a random team. You know, you're going to go to Denver and be the head coach there, and you know what, you're going to be hovering around 500 for the next couple years, and if you don't perform, you're going to get fired. Who knows if you're ever going to get another job again. Why not stay in Cincinnati? Coach Anarumo, hear me out on this. And Mr. Tobin and Mr. Brown, let's set a precedent. Let's say, yes, Anarumo, they want to hire Coach Anarumo in three different places. Why can't we just say, you know what? All right, they want you for $5 million a year. We'll give you $8 million a year to stay in Cincinnati. I think it's worth it. There's no salary cap on coaches. If you can retain a defensive mind that is consistently winning games for you in the second half with halftime adjustments, and you have a Super Bowl quarterback and Super Bowl skill positions, and that window is here right now, why not keep it together? Why not just say, we're going to outbid anyone who wants to make you a head coach? And you know what, Coach Anarumo? Win a couple championships here, and you'll write your own ticket, and you'll get a coaching position with even a better team. Don't just go now to, you know, the first one with a smile and a checkbook. You know, stay here. Let's do it here for a couple years. We have a really good thing going here. And we know it's going to continue on with Joe Burrow and Coach Taylor and the players that we have. But sometimes when you lose a coordinator like that, things change. What happens next year if we're still this explosive team, but we have a new coordinator and there's an adjustment period, and maybe the halftime adjustments aren't the same as this year, and you know, we fall a little bit short of going to the Super Bowl next year? It's just not worth it. Pay this guy a few extra million, set a precedent, and say, no, we're going to keep our coordinator. He's not going to go and just get some pedestrian head coaching job somewhere where he dies on the vine. He's going to stay here and stay part of the magic for a couple years, and we're all going to be worth way more than we're worth now because we're going to have a couple Super Bowl rings. So anyone out there who's listening to me, Miss Blackburn, Mr. Tobin, Mr. Brown, Coach Anarumo, Coach Taylor, whoever can hear this, whoever can get word to them, put it out there. Let's think about that. That would be a great move if we can retain this coaching staff as well as retaining these great players.
This is Zaire Johnson, and you are listening to the Unofficial Bengals Podcast.
NFL Playoffs Round 1, Cincinnati Bengals 24, Baltimore Ravens 17. There's such a finality to the playoffs. You're watching these games and you're excited. It's Bengals football. We've been watching it week after week. We have all these expectations. And then at this point in the playoffs, if something goes wrong, that's it. There's no more games. Season over. You wake up the next morning and there's no relevant Bengals football until September. And that finality just kills me because I love watching the Bengals. You guys know that. I know you guys love watching the Bengals too. I can't get enough of it. I wish it was year-round. I wish these games were 8 hours long. But I gotta say, my emotions were going crazy during this game because I love it so much. And when the playoffs come, it's serious. And I'm watching the game with my girl, and I'm turning to her, and I'm like, am I actually having fun right now? I'm really not sure. All right, before we go into the specifics of the game, let's talk about the Ravens a little bit. Some dirty plays. And I'll take it like that. As long as none of our guys got hurt, let's make them look bad. You know, everyone, the Steelers are everyone's darling. Oh, the Ravens are the second best team in that division. You know, the Bengals are the best team in that division. And the Bengals are the least dirty team in that division. And I'm glad that everyone on national TV saw it. You had that queen hit on Burrow low as Burrow was going out of bounds. Just not cool. And they don't like each other. I know they had some kind of issue at LSU. I think they had like a little skirmish or something. But that's continued into the NFL. Even after the game, there were no like smiles and handshakes and exchange jersey with those guys. It was like a quick pat and move on. But man, that was a low hit. You had Houston with the horse collar on Burrow, which I guess they explained that that's not a foul when the quarterback's in the pocket. But man, it didn't look savory when Joe Burrow's getting pulled down from his shoulder pads where, you know, guys break legs doing that. I'm glad that didn't go that way. But another, I guess you want to call that dirty. Peters was really aggressive and, you know, he had the squabble with Chase. He's on top of Mixon after a tackle and, like, taunting him right in his face. And Mixon was mad. Mixon was on the bottom and he shoved Peters to the ground and wanted to fight him. I don't know what Peters said to him. But all those things, let the Ravens go down like that and let the Bengals go down as the classy organization. And Harbaugh, the same thing. He gives that total disrespectful interview to Melissa Stark. She's a veteran. She comes across as a really nice person. You know, she's a respected broadcaster. And he just gives her this snarky answer because he doesn't want to get put on the spot about replacing a quarterback. And you know what? Good. I don't know how you think you're going to come across when you give an answer like that. And if you're comfortable in your own skin to be that much of a jerk on national TV where there's not one person in the world who thought you were a good guy after that. Hey, you know what? I give you respect for having that much self-confidence, but I'm glad you came across like that. And you guys know I am not a fan of Coach Tomlin, and I'm not a fan of Coach Harbaugh. And it was nice to see him slip up in a circumstance like this. And he can do all the reflecting that he wants from his couch in Baltimore while we move on. I'm liking the new chant at home when T. Higgins makes a catch. You hear T from the crowd. And he deserves it. He's a great player. And especially after the Hamlin thing, you could tell he was rattled from it. So the crowd really just gave him this new identity and this new personalized cheer, which you know makes a player feel good. You know, think about it. Think about making a play, even just a first down, and the whole crowd is just chanting your name. That's the best feeling in the world. Our opening drive script was great yet again. I mean, we marched downfield with this long, methodical drive. You know, we have to punch those in. We can't just go for three in those situations, but very well scripted, and I'm seeing a lot of that. Opening games, first drive of the second half, just this really clever, creative script and a successful opening drive. And when we get a lead on teams, it's hard for them to come back against us. And I don't know what happened to Dobbins in this game. I thought he was running successfully. He ended up with 13 carries. And I'm saying during the game, I don't know, I'm starting to play like Baltimore coach getting frustrated. And I'm like, just give the ball to Dobbins. First down, second down, right now. And they got away from it a little bit. And later in the game, you didn't see him as much. You saw Edwards in there. I don't know if it looked like he limped off in the fourth quarter at one point. Not sure what happened there. But I think that the coaching staff didn't effectively use Dobbins. He was the best offensive player at this point. They have Andrews, but you need a quarterback to find Andrews to make him the greatest. And they just kind of forgot about Dobbins, so I'll take it. And we only gave up 3 receptions to wide receivers. And, you know, that goes on their quarterback and the receiving core and their scheme. But it also talks about our defensive backfield. You know, that's tough to go into a playoff game against a 10-win team and their wide receivers end up with 3 total receptions. And there were a lot of long drives in this game, so that results in like reduced possessions for everybody. So it's hard to put up a lot of big numbers and big points when, you know, there was like, we had a 7-minute opening drive. I think the Ravens had like a 10-minute drive at one point. We had a long third quarter drive. I think in total, the Bengals had 7 possessions, and that's not a lot in one game. Offensively, we scored on 3 of them. But those are the things that factor into Joe Burrow having like 210 whatever yards, as opposed to 300-yard games and 100-yard rushers and receivers. You know, if you don't have that many possessions, it's hard to put up numbers. But we don't care about numbers. We care about wins. And we had just enough possessions to win this game. And on top of that, the Ravens were trying to control time of possession because they wanted to keep Joe Burrow off the field. And when you don't have a great quarterback, like in their circumstance, you run the ball a lot. And that's what they were doing. And there were times where I was like, man, Joe Burrow's been on the sideline for a long time. And that's a smart game plan by the Ravens. Fortunately for us, we were able to overcome that. But that's one of the things, you know, they went into the game saying, let's keep number 9 off the field because it's our best chance of winning this game. And then the most disastrous play of this game was that Hamilton hit on Hurst. It allowed the Ravens to take the lead going into the half, which we always talk about. You know, you score inside of 2, you come out strong in the third quarter, you can really swing a game. And the Ravens were able to do this and score inside of 2 minutes. Disastrous play. It was a fumble. It led to a go-ahead score by them. And then we had the Jonah injury all on one play. So really disastrous play to end the first half. And we overcame it by holding them to a field goal when they were inside the 10 at the end of the half. They had a lot of plays inside the 20, and we just would not let them in the end zone. And that goes to the fact that they don't have a great offense, but it also goes to the fact that we have an excellent defense and an even better red zone defense. And what do we do to answer that? We score at that crucial time and come out of the half for a touchdown on a long drive. So they scored at the end of the half. We scored at the beginning of the half to neutralize that. So it worked in our favor. They scored 3. We scored 7. And then if you look more game flow stuff, we had that 3-and-out at the end of the third quarter. That hurt and kind of kept them in the game. And that's when tensions were really rising. You know, when we're going into the fourth quarter tied 17-17 with the Ravens, you know, that's not a time to take it easy and have fun and take a breath. That's a time where, like, I'm glued to the TV, frozen, and, like, my hands are clenched and hanging on to every snap, every second of the game. And then here we are, the 17-17 game. They're about to score, and we have this once-in-a-lifetime play to Sam Hubbard where he gets the touchdown. At that point, it was no looking back. We had all the momentum in the world, and the Ravens went the rest of the fourth quarter kind of sleepwalking, and they were just never to be the same after that big play. And the roughing penalty on Chrisman kept the clock moving. Even though we didn't do much after that, it was kind of like a three and out roughing and then a three and out or something like that. It enabled us to keep the ball, drain the clock, and put another dagger into the Baltimore Ravens. And then despite all that, despite us being the better team, playing the better game, having the magical play, the Ravens are still there, down by a score with 3:10 left in the game. Even a first and 10 from the 17, and they couldn't push it in. Kevin Zeitler, good old friend of the Bengals, had that holding penalty, which really killed that drive and made them have to throw a Hail Mary at the end of the game. And even that almost went into the hands of Prochet. I just couldn't believe it. You know, at that point, when he almost got that, I was like, all right, you know what, let's go to overtime. The new overtime rules, we're both going to have a possession, you know, that whole thing. So it was really at that point when we were up 24-17, there was really nothing that they could do to make me think that we were going to lose this game, but still a lot of stress leading up to that. But that Zeitler hold, that destroyed them. And the Harbaugh clock management at the end, I just don't know what he was thinking there. You know, I know what he was thinking. He was actually thinking we're going to drain it and score and not give them enough time to score, but he didn't factor in other things. Like, what if we have a sack? What if you have a penalty? Anything can happen there. And he just didn't leave himself enough time. And that's yet another thing that's going to be questioned all off season. And honestly, I love it. All right, on to individual performances. And the first thing I'd like to talk about is Joe Burrow. There's not a ton of things to analyze about him. It was an efficient game. It wasn't this monopoly numbers game. He had one touchdown pass. He had a couple hundred yards. Not a 300-yard game for him. None of that matters. I love how Tirico described him as a rock star in Cincinnati. And even though it wasn't a real flashy game for Joe Burrow, he was still very efficient. He led this team when we needed it. He got the first downs when we needed it. He scored when we needed it. He had that beautiful touch pass to the corner of the end zone to Higgins early. It was incomplete, but a really good throw. A ton of great throws. He had a rushing TD himself at the one, and he was smart about it. Rather than go right up the middle against that strong front, he went in towards the left, and he just found a hole, got underneath everybody, and went like kind of off tackle almost for a quarterback sneak rather than just doing the traditional and forcing it up the middle. It just showed such field awareness, and it was a big play for us. Early third quarter, he gets another big first down with his legs when all looked lost, and that would have been dangerous if we didn't get that first down there. We would have gave the ball back to Baltimore, maybe with a chance for them to catch up, and you know, it would not have been a good thing. And a first down by Joe Burrow on kind of a broken play really solved that. The two-point conversion to Higgins, another great throw. And, you know, I don't know, he was like 23 for 32 or 34, something like that. Again, not numbers that are going to light up the fantasy scoreboards, but exactly what we needed to win this game. And he can win big, you know, with 310 yards and four touchdown passes, or he can win small with 210 yards and one touchdown pass. None of that matters. And that's a lot of these analysts. You know, I listen to some of the guys in the New York media that don't really follow the teams as closely as we do, and they just base everything off stats and PFF ratings. And there's so much more to it. You need to see guys play on a down-by-down basis and see the mentality and see how often they win plays and versus how often they lose plays. All right, so let's talk about some offensive observations. We did a lot of five wide receivers in this game, you know, a lot of empty sets, and that was a result of saying, hey, we're going to get the ball out quickly. We want to have five immediate options for Joe Burrow. So I believe that was the reason for using that formation more than usual. And when you're having trouble protecting up front, you would figure you don't want to go five wides. They're going to exploit it. But in this case, it did work for us. Joe Burrow was in the shotgun most of the time, even on like third and short and fourth and one. So they really went into this game with the mentality of, you know, give him that couple yard head start and let him survey the field, and let's not even take the chance of doing dropbacks and a ton of play action and risking hits and danger in the backfield, especially with your offensive line that's a little compromised due to injury. And a lot of quick throws, like we mentioned before. And when you have Burrow's decision-making and the quick release, that really is going to help in situations like this. So that's how we went about it offensively. It was a quick passing game. We weren't afraid to spread out the field, but we knew that ball was going to be coming out in about 2 seconds every time. And going back to that opening drive that I had complimented the script and the play calling on, This is what you need to do on opening drives. We involved 6 different skill position players on that drive. You get everyone a touch. That way everyone's in the game. The defense doesn't know who you're focusing on. They don't know if it's a Chase game or a Higgins game because everybody got a chance. So if you look at that first drive, Mixon got his touches. Perine got his touches. There was a nice pass to Boyd for a first down. There was a nice pass to Higgins for a first down. There was a nice pass to Chase for a first down. We also got Hurst involved. So that first possession, you made sure everyone got a touch, everyone's in the game, and the Ravens didn't know where they were going to be attacked from. So excellent play calling, excellent script, and let's take that same mentality into the game against the Bills, and I guarantee it's going to be successful. And this was another game, lots of pitch and catch with Chase, not the big deep passes that, you know, were the hallmark of 2021. This year, it's like, you're my go-to guy. I'm going to find you early and often. Yeah, I'll give you a 6-yard pass and let you do the rest. Or, you know, we need 8. You're getting a 9-yard pass for a first down. Or I'll hit you at the line of scrimmage and let you take off with it. Either way, lots of pitch and catch, just like last game. That's what you need to do if you're worried about your offensive line. And Chase gets 9 receptions for 84 yards and a touchdown. Again, not Monopoly numbers, but numbers that are enough to win the game. A ton of first downs there, a ton of moving the ball in key situations. So the pitch and catch with Chase is really working. And we ran the ball well early, but then the offensive line started wearing down and losing their one-on-ones. We had the injury to Jonah. Everything changed a little bit. So that hurt the Bengals a little bit, but we didn't get away from it. We still ran the ball in the second half. But it was just like that first drive of the game and early in the game, I was like, man, if we run like this, we're going to have no problems. But that didn't last long. Against the Bills, I'm hoping that we can get a little more sustained running attack. And I'm sure we're going to be scheming things up like that because you do have to go balanced against the Bills as well. It just can't be duck and chuck every play. Then the other thing I wanted to mention is there were 3 passes to Mixon early. I think all on the first drive. And then I don't think he had another reception for the rest of the game. So that's one of those things, and a lot of times if you're calling plays, you have it pre-planned. You make sure you get it to him. It was working. And then you kind of get caught up in the flow of the game and you get away from it and you kind of forget about it. You have these other plays you want to run. Maybe there's something else that you saw that you want to exploit and you start forgetting about some of those things that worked earlier. So I'm hoping that we continue to get the ball to Mixon in the air in all 4 quarters when we play the Buffalo Bills. I was shocked that they didn't go to it after that first drive or two because it was very successful early. But like I said, sometimes you just forget about things and you get caught up in the game. And then when you look at the total offense, we only had about 240 yards, and on paper that doesn't look good, but who cares? We won the game, we're moving on to the next round of the playoffs. It doesn't matter with Joe Burrow. It's not about numbers, it's about having successful drives, scoring when you need to score, and winning games. So again, the stat people would say, oh, the Bengals offense, I don't know, you know, less than 300 yards, they're not in sync, I'm seeing problems. No, every game is different. Some games are high-flying. Some games are street fights, and this game was a street fight. And we showed we can win a finesse game when it's, you know, high-flying quarterback versus high-flying quarterback. And we can also win a street fight when it's a divisional rival that's tough on both sides of the ball and strong in the trenches. We can win either or, and that's why we're a Super Bowl contender. All right, so on to the defense. This season has produced some moments that we're never going to forget. The Mixon game where he got all those touchdowns, the Joe Burrow game where he threw a bunch of touchdown passes, and then you have the Hubbard play, the 98-yard touchdown. Pratt stands him up. Wilson knocks the ball away. Hubbard takes off 98 yards the other way. Those are 3 guys that are having their best years as Bengals. All of them are excelling and contributing heavily to the success of this defense. And beyond this play, Hubbard played a great game. Wilson and Pratt have been playing great games all year. And this is a play that we're all never going to forget. And look, Jermaine Pratt in the playoffs involved in yet another unforgettable Cincinnati Bengals play. But that goes on all 3 of them. You know, Pratt to have the strength to stand him up, Wilson to have the presence of mind to slap that ball away, and Hubbard, you know, was kind of lucky that it fell right into his hands, but the presence of mind to say, whoa, I got the ball, I'm going to give it my best 100-yard dash down the field. It all worked out. It turned the game around. I was going absolutely crazy when it was happening, and I'm sure most of you were as well. So very happy that in addition to having a great, exciting team, we're having some historic plays like this in big games. Akeem Davis Gaither had a good game, showed a lot of range, had the big interception early, a couple special teams tackles. He was in there on goal line D. And his interception was off my favorite route combo. So what I like to do is I like to have someone doing an out and then another guy clearing. You have the one guy clear. When the guy does the out underneath him, it almost creates a natural pick and it confuses the defense. So it's very hard to cover that one-on-one. But you can't run that against zone. That's if you have man. If you have two defenders out there and two receivers, you can run those kind of crossing routes or deception routes or floods, whatever you want to call them, and they work. But if it's in a zone, that defeats the purpose because you're trying to confuse guys to not be able to get to an area. But if they're in a zone, they're already in that area. So what happens? The Ravens run that great route combo, but it's against the zone defense, and where they think there's going to be confusion and a wide open receiver, there's Akeem Davis Gaither just waiting in his zone. So awful decision by the quarterback, and I mean, it just makes sense. It's just, you just can't do that against that route combination. If it was man-to-man, it could be effective. In this case, it really burned the Ravens. B.J. Hill, another really good game. He had that huge fourth quarter sack. Just continues to earn his money. And again, I'm going back to it one more time. I was a fan of keeping Ogunjobi and letting B.J. Hill go. And that was absolutely the wrong decision. B.J. Hill is a player and had a much better year than Ogunjobi. And I'm glad that the Cincinnati organization did not listen to me in that circumstance. And they did the right thing and the better thing for the organization. Zach Carter is getting better as the season goes too. He's had a very active playoffs, and he's just getting better as the season goes on. And you figure that. A rookie, there's two things that can happen to a rookie. They can hit that ceiling because they're not used to playing that many games in a season. But when you have a guy who's a rotational player like this, he doesn't have the wear and tear on his body to kind of burn out. In this case, he just gains knowledge and gains field experience. And, you know, working with that defensive line and all those great players, he's going to get better just by hanging out with them and being around them. And that's exactly what's going on with Zach Carter. He's a third-round pick. It's not just a castaway. It's not just a rotational guy. We have a lot invested in this guy and really expect him to become a key contributor and a starter. And what he's been doing the last few weeks is really contributing to that. Camp Sample was very active in there too, especially in the run game. He's another guy, a rotational guy, that just gets better and better. And he's had a very low-key good season for us as well. And going back to Bates, he's been shining in the postseason 2 years in a row. He took a couple bad angles in this game, but you're not going to be perfect as a defensive back. Everyone's going to take a bad angle here and there. There's so much riding on those safeties. You're the last line of defense. And there were a couple times in this game that as fans, you forget about it. You know, oh, Bates makes the tackle. All right, it's first down, Ravens, let's go. But if Bates took a bad angle on some of those plays or messed up on some of those plays, those are touchdowns, and he didn't let that happen. So Jesse Bates playing phenomenally right now. We don't know what's going to happen with that contract, but the better he plays right now, the harder it's going to be to make a decision on that. And Von Bell, same thing. He shines in the big moments. He's been just playing outstanding all season, and he's physical on all three levels. He's a tough safety that can play in the backfield. He can make tackles at the linebacker level. He can make hard hits on the receivers and the tight ends. So just a guy that really does it on all three levels of the defense, and another guy you have to keep around for the long haul. He's a great player, not a crazy expensive price tag, and he's a leader, and he's a tone setter. And Eli Apple, I talk about him every week, a physical tackler, taking on running backs one-on-one. He took that friendly fire hit from Osai, who admittedly plays a little recklessly at times. If anyone's going to give you a friendly fire hit, it's going to be Osai because he's just throwing his body all over the field, all over the ground on every play. That's something that we'll coach out of him. I mean, you don't want to coach his intensity out of him, but you want to give him a little more field acumen and field awareness. And in this case, you know, Eli Apple takes the big hit to the collarbone neck area, comes out of the game. And again, I was saying during the game, I was like, he'll be back in the second half. And there he was. And I know he let up the touchdown. It was a play where he kind of bit on the fake and then slipped. And those are the things that people want to get down on. You, oh, Eli Apple, he's mediocre. He let up a touchdown against the Ravens. But look at the body of work, though. The receivers did nothing against him. And I just want to get that out there, that you can give up a touchdown here and there, and that doesn't mean that you had a bad game. And he is just playing excellently. And the toughness he's showing and the fact that he came back into that game is huge. And, you know, if we're missing Eli Apple and playing the Bills or the Chiefs, it's going to be a tough go. So I'm glad that he's healthy enough to get back in there, and I'm hoping he's at full strength for the upcoming games. And Cam Taylor-Britt, solid in coverage, good zone responsibility. As a rookie, he really knows his place on the field. The tackling, the hard hitting, tackling Andrews one-on-one, not afraid to stick his nose in there. Played with a bad groin, you wouldn't have even known it. He was flying all over the field. Cordell Volson is getting better and better on that offensive line and could be a fixture there for the next few years. But I think that Cam Taylor-Britt has been our rookie of the year right now, even though he played basically half the season. I just can't believe he came off the bench, came off injured reserve, and is able to contribute like this and pretty much lock down his side of the field. And more defensive backs that are playing well. Mike Hilton, he had the sack, he had the tackle for loss. Did you even see him tackle a receiver or a tight end? I don't think I did the whole game. That means that his guy wasn't getting the ball. So another guy who's shining in the playoffs, another tough defensive back. And I talked about it last episode. The tackling and the toughness of these defensive backs is a real difference maker in this defense. On to DJ Reader. He was just getting doubled the whole game. He was still effective. Linderbaum was all over him. Reader gets the push in the run game. He gets the batted ball. Not a lot of flashy numbers or big plays from him, but you take him out of there and it's a totally different game, especially with that offensive line and that run game that they have. And then back to Osai. I get on him a little bit for the rawness, but he does have the passion and the energy, and he had a couple pressures this game as well. And he's another one. You look at the second half of the year, I think it's better than his first half of the year, so I'm glad that he's trending in the right direction. Special teams, Chrisman continues to punt well, and that roughing call on him was a major turning point in this game as well. McPherson hits the 39-yarder, and then I think at that point he was then 21 for 21 on postseason kicks. Then he misses the extra point. I know everyone got freaked out about that, but if you think about it, he's had 20-plus playoff kicks in his career. He's missed one. All right, so let's go over some key plays from the game. The first one is the Chase touchdown. What we do is we have four wides. We have Boyd, Higgins, Chase on the outside. What they do there, there's trips on one side, and this is one of those routes that I talk about, one of those route combinations where you create confusion and the defense loses track of a player because of everyone crossing and doing different things. So in this case, you have Higgins on the line of scrimmage. The other two guys are set back. Higgins just clears and goes into the end zone. You have Boyd inside. He runs the out. You have Chase outside. He runs the in. There's the confusing part for the defense. Patrick Queen doesn't stay home. He's got his eyes on Hurst on the other side for just a little bit too long. By the time he realizes that Chase is in the middle in his zone, Burrow puts it there perfectly, right in the middle of the field. Chase breaks the Queen tackle and another tackle, dives into the end zone, touchdown. We outsmarted the Ravens. They made a mental mistake. And on top of their mental mistake, we had the physicality with the great throw and the run after catch to convert it. So we beat him mentally and we beat him physically on that play. The next big play was a combination of two plays. So we had the Hurst fumble, which I know really burned him because he wants to do so well against the Ravens. And I saw it. You almost think, like, was he trying to do too much? No, it was really just an outstanding play by Hamilton to punch that ball away. So, you know, that's what happened. But what do? We come back with a Hurst almost touchdown that puts the ball at, like, the one-inch line. So what happens there? We're in four wides again, Hurst being one of those wides. And it's really nothing crazy. All it was Hurst did a post from the slot, and Burrow read it immediately and got rid of that ball. I counted. I didn't have a stopwatch, but it felt like he got rid of that ball in less than 2 seconds on that play. So that wasn't a deception or any wrinkle to that play. It was just a quarterback who can read things faster than any quarterback in the league and a tight end that got open really quick. And there was the big play to Hurst. He almost got in the end zone, but we eventually got in the end zone shortly after that. So another huge play in this game. Then the next key play is a series of plays that led up to the 98-yard fumble recovery for Hubbard. So on first down, you have Camp Sample just getting a piece of the ball intended for Ricard. You know, and they're on like the 3-yard line at this point, so you have an incomplete pass. Second down, they run it to Edwards behind that powerful offensive line, and Von Bell just stands his ground, stands up Gus Edwards, and then Pratt comes to clean it up. Ravens now two plays, and they're only down to the 1-yard line. Now we go to third down. The Ravens are in a big formation. They're doing the quarterback sneak with the push from behind that's become like the big in vogue play of the last year or two. What happens? Pratt stands him up. Wilson bats the ball, falls into Hubbard's lap. Off to the races. 98 yards. Hubbard is watching himself on the Jumbotron. Hubbard is running out of breath. Andrews is catching up to him. And even Davis Gaither's clapping as they're going downfield. And I don't know if that was interpreted as he wanted him to pitch the ball to him, or if Davis Gaither was saying, you know, yo, there's Andrews coming up. Make sure someone blocks him. So Von Bell's running downfield happily. Doesn't quite get in the way of Andrews. And I'm like, please don't stop him at the 20, because we're having a rough time scoring right now. I don't want to play the field goal game, especially when they have Tucker in their back pocket. So what happens, Bailey kind of gets in the way and gives him a little bit of a push in the back. It's not called. Andrews falls to the ground. Hubbard rumbles into the end zone, and we have one of the greatest plays in Cincinnati Bengals history from a Cincinnati native and one of the most beloved players of this team. All right, let's quickly talk about the sacks. On the first sack, you had Patrick Queen blowing up Mixon on a blitz. Joe gets forced up in the pocket, and both tackles kind of lose their blocks by then. That's really on Joe Mixon. Second sack, Adeniji, who I said has been playing well, he just got beat by an inside spin move by Justin Houston. That's the play that Houston grabbed Burrow kind of by the horse collar and just didn't let go. Burrow goes to the ground, sack number two. That one's on Adeniji. Sack number three, Jonah got bull rushed by Owe right into Burrow. And Burrow actually tried to step away from it, but he tripped over Jonah's leg. So sack number three goes on Jonah Williams there. Fourth sack, kind of a costly one. Third and 10 in the fourth quarter. Carmen gets beat by Bowser. Sharpin gets beat as well. Burrow gets drilled. Sack number four. That could go on either one of them, but I'm going to pin that one on Jackson Carmen in that case. So you have a Mixon, an Adeniji, a Jonah, and a Carmen, and quite honestly, too many. All right, first drive of the second half, which is always so important. Rather than go over all 10 plays, I'm just going to summarize them. We did four runs inside, so that's what we came out of the locker room saying. We're going to keep running the ball, and we're not going to go wide. We're going to go right at the heart of the defense. So they did that four times out of the 10 plays on that drive. Then there were three passes to Chase, one pass to Boyd, one pass to Hurst, and then the Joe Burrow sneak for the one-yard touchdown. The Hurst one was that big play that we just talked about. So what I derive from this is they came into the second half saying, we're not going to get away from the run, we're going to run it up between the tackles, and we're going to get Jamar Chase more involved. That's exactly what they did on that first drive of the second half, and it resulted in a touchdown. So that's it, a playoff win, exactly what we wanted, exactly what from the beginning of the year we were saying that we were going to do, and we're fulfilling that prophecy. If I'm a cat and I have 9 lives, I probably have 7.5 at this point because I was so stressed out during this game. But in all honesty, it is so good to see playoff wins become the norm for us. And it's so great to have Bengals football to watch in mid-January and beyond.
McLeavy Minute.
All right, we're here with Tom McLeavy. Tom, how are you today?
Good, Frankie. How you been?
All right, my friend, I need to ask you, what are your thoughts after this crazy wild card game?
Wow. I mean, first off, all the games so far, unbelievable. But, we won. We're moving on. You know, us as longtime Bengal fans, you know, how many times did we witness, like, players like Roethlisberger and others like that would. We'd be playing them tough, and they would step up and make a play that would beat us. Well, you know, finally, Frank, we have those type of players now. Logan Wilson's, Mike Hilton's. Big times in the game, they seem to rise up and make key plays to get a victory. And it's, you know, it's so rewarding. That all the praise on the Bengals, all you know, rightly so, seems to go to the offensive side. But man, our defense is really has a bunch of playmakers. Going into the game, you know, I was really worried that you know you play the team three times now, anything can happen. You know them so well. But the difference between the two teams are the head coaches. The atmosphere that they have made their team. Meaning, I used to be a fan of John Harbaugh and the Ravens. When the Bengals, you know, were never in the playoffs, I'd always watch them because I was always impressed by their teams, how tough they were. But now, John Harbaugh is a punk. He's leaning on past accomplishments, and he's like a little spoiled brat that doesn't get his way, and he throws temper tantrums. He's like that type of guy now, and his team reflects it. Now, they played a tough game. You know, you listen to Zach Taylor, you listen to the Bengal players, you know, great game, or we beat a great team, you know, complimentary. You listen to the Ravens, Harbaugh did not once compliment the Bengals. Dobbins started pointing fingers saying that if we had Lamar Jackson, we would have won. I mean, there's the locker room could not be total opposites, and that's the difference right now between the team moving on and the team going home. I thought Hundley played good, that this team could now move on from Lamar Jackson's distractions, that they won't be handcuffed now by a contract that they have to pay him, and they can move on with Hundley, seeing now Hundley can move this team, and that Lamar Jackson, like, bailed on his teammates, basically. Even though he was hurt, it's a business decision. You know, you could just see the reply of both locker rooms to make you think that the better team moved on. Now, we finally have the playmakers to be capable. And going into Buffalo this week, we had our chance to lose like we did last year against the Raiders, which we moved on. So this weekend, I feel a lot more confident. Yes, we have to get over the injuries. We had Jonah Williams' injury, which is going to be taxing now. We're just going to move on, and we're going to go into Buffalo, and I feel a lot confident now. And the second half adjustments, again, by moving Trey Hendrickson, who they were running at, and moving Cam Sample over there, was genius. Like, hats off again to this coaching staff. Another part of the success of this organization is because not only the players on the field, but the coaches utilizing the players. And we're moving on because of this. I haven't seen his name mentioned for coaching vacancies. So, it benefits us again. So we'll see what happens, but we're moving on to Buffalo.
NFL Playoffs Round 2, Cincinnati Bengals at Buffalo Bills. All right, so here we are, a road playoff game at Buffalo. You know, everyone's AFC favorite coming into the year. Josh Allen was playing at an MVP level before he hurt his elbow. Still playing great. They have a great roster, but I'm not afraid of them. I think that in the game that got canceled, that looked like our game to win, even though it was so early. You know, we faced a lot of the big AFC teams, and we've had no problems really against any of them. And this is the one team that we haven't seen over the last couple years. And this is just a heavyweight matchup waiting to unfold. They have a good roster. We have a good roster. They have good coaching. We have good coaching. They have Josh Allen. We have Joe Burrow. All right, so Bill's coaching staff, Sean McDermott, a likable coach and a very successful coach up there. His players love him. He's hard-nosed. They scheme well up there. He's got everybody prepared to play. Old friend Leslie Frazier as a defensive coordinator, much improved over his days as a Cincinnati Bengals defensive coordinator, but he has that defense playing well. Ken Dorsey, an amazing play caller on offense. Matthew Smiley, the special teams coordinator, has that unit playing great. So excellent coaching. And to win this game, it's not like the Bills are going to hand you a win with bad coaching decisions. I'm not saying that we can't outcoach them on adjustments in the second half. I foresee that happening. but it's not like they're going to make these major errors. So you have a good coaching staff there that's an asset to the Bills and a reason why they win double-digit games every year. So let's quickly look at the Buffalo Bills offense. Josh Allen, all-world player, can kill you with his arm, probably a top two or three arm in the league, can kill you with his legs, probably the first or second best running quarterback in the league right now. So you have a dual threat there. I still think he's not quite the same after the elbow hit a few weeks back. Running back Devin Singletary is dangerous on the ground and in the air. The rookie Cook, he scored a touchdown in this game. Fresh legs right there, so a good change of pace back that you can't sleep on him as well. And then they have Nyheim Hines, who had the two touchdowns. He doesn't get as much action as the other guys, but he's another running back that obviously can go the length of the field, as evidenced by his two return touchdowns a couple weeks back as well. Stephon Diggs is just like, you can almost put him in the bank for 100 yards every game. Allen's main target, a definite threat that you can't sleep on, you can't cover one-on-one. So he's a major offensive weapon. Aside from Allen, he's the biggest offensive weapon on this team. Gabe Davis, big play Davis, he shined in the playoffs last year and just took that momentum right into the season this year and has become their T. Higgins. Isaiah McKenzie as the number three, another guy you can't sleep on. They brought back Cole Beasley. He's dangerous in those four or five wide receiver sets, and he's got that frame where he can get low and kind of crawl underneath you for a key first down when you least expect it. John Brown is more of a deep threat for them, and they were involving Khalil Shakir a little bit more in this game too. So that's a whole bunch of, I just named six different wide receivers that are threats to catch the ball and do damage for them. So that's a lot of guys to worry about. I'm glad we're deep at corner. That's why we can't afford to miss Apple in this game. And I say you have Alan George active in this game. And if Jalen Davis is healthy, I say that you have him active this game as well. Dawson Knox, another good tight end. It seems like every team has a good tight end these days. It's like the knight in chess. Just the unexpected piece that isn't the marquee but can do so much damage. And like I said, it seems like every team has one. And Dawson Knox is another one of those guys that can do a lot of damage. They love him in the red zone. So another threat on this offense to worry about. Offensive line, Deion Dawkins having a good year at left tackle. Roger Saffold having a pretty year at left guard. Mitch Morse, decent center. Ryan Bates, decent right guard. Spencer Brown at right tackle, another one having a slightly subpar year. So you have a couple vulnerabilities on that line. The Bills are in the same boat as us. They give up a lot of pressures on the quarterback. And in this case, if you have a little deficiency at left guard and at right tackle, you can exploit that. Especially now that's going to be B.J. Hill on Saffold a lot of the time. And then you're going to have Hubbard on Spencer Brown a lot of the times. Maybe we'll mix that up. Either way, there are vulnerabilities on this Bills offensive line, and I'm looking forward to exploiting them and getting to Allen. Strategically, how do you approach it? I mean, there's a lot of weapons to worry about. You really have to make Allen your main concern. You can't let him throw the ball all over the field. You have to pressure him, but you have to maintain your gap integrity when you pressure him. You have to have someone spying him. He needs a lot of attention. And if you sleep on him and neglect to have a spy on him, or, you know, let him just haul off downfield, he's going to win the game for them. So he has to be the main thing that we stop in this game. And I know that's obvious, right? Stop the quarterback, win the game. But in this case, you know, their quarterback is their best weapon on the ground and through the air. And you have to worry about Diggs. You have to give him extra attention. So really, now you're dedicating a specific guy to Allen, two guys to Diggs. That opens up things for the other guys. Davis can kill you if you pay too much attention to Diggs. If you pay too much attention to Allen, Singletary can kill you. If you pay too much attention to all them, they find Dawson Knox. So a lot of weapons, a lot of things to worry about this game. I would say the main things are don't let Diggs beat you deep and don't let Allen beat you with his legs. All right, on to the Buffalo Bills defense. That defensive line is deadly. Oliver is great in the middle. Daquan Jones is tough, too. He's having probably even as good of a year or better year than Oliver. So you're going to have them on Sharping and the rookie Volson. So there's some matchup issues there. You have to make sure that our guys are on their game, and you have to make sure that Karras is making the right reads and helping whichever guard needs more help on each specific play. Coming off the edge, you have Shaq Lawson and Greg Rousseau, two other dangerous guys. You know, if they had Von Miller and Boogie Basham still healthy, that would be a real threat. Now they only really have a couple pass rushing threats, so that works in our favor. But either way, I can point to these four defensive linemen and match them up with our offensive line, and it looks like they win on almost every circumstance. I mean, they win on paper, but the games aren't played on paper. So our guys really have to be ready and put up their best game, or else it's going to be a jailbreak, and it's going to make things very tough for Joe Burrow to execute his way down the field. Then you go to the second level of the Bills, and you have All-Pro Matt Milano, who's having a monster year, causing turnovers, almost broke A.J. Dillon's leg a few weeks back. That's a strong linebacker who gets turnovers, is rangy, and having a great year. Edmonds is kind of a sideline-to-sideline linebacker, so a lot of trouble on the second level there, too. They're dangerous in stopping the running backs. They're dangerous to throw against, too, and they can also bring pressure. Corners, you have Tre'Davious White, who hasn't been the same since the injury, but still a good player. Dane Jackson on the other side, playing decently. Kair Elam, he got hurt last game, but he's like their number four corner. And you have Johnson in the slot, who I think is playing better than all of them right now. So they have some vulnerabilities on the outside, but you know, you go up the middle of the field for the Bills with, you think just like us, you know, your two defensive tackles, your linebackers, and your safeties. You know, they have Oliver Jones, second level Milano Edmonds, third level Poyer. That's a strong defense in the middle of the field and a strong defense on all three levels. They have Dean Marlowe replacing DeMar Hamlin, and he's not performing as well in Hamlin's absence, so there might be a little vulnerability there at safety. So a very tough defense to face on all levels, and no wonder why they've gotten this far. In addition to that offense, they have a lot of playmakers on defense. So what do we need to do? Again, I say don't be afraid to get the ball to Chase and Higgins and Boyd, no matter who's covering them, no matter how highly ranked or how well the DBs are playing. Those three guys win the individual matchups against virtually any secondary, and the Bills are no exception. You have to also try the run game early and often, whether it's working or not. You want to control time of possession. You don't want to be one-dimensional. You don't want them to tee off on Joe Burrow because it's a pass play every play. And most importantly, you want to get some push in the run game early because we have an inexperienced offensive line that's a little overwhelmed. So you don't want to just have them on their heels backing up every play in pass defense. You want to give them a chance to attack and them a chance to make their statement and get their push. So with a lot of running plays early, these guys aren't on the defensive, you know, basically like in a fight. They're not sitting there trying to block punches. They're punching. And I think that's the key for us in this game. Protect that offensive line and give them confidence by letting them attack in the run game. And then let that set up the pass. Like I said, if we just come out of the gate and it's eight passes out of the first 10 plays, you know, these guys are in more of a defend position than an attack position. And that's not what we need. So there it is, the key. Don't give up on your playmakers. Find a way to protect Joe Burrow and let him do his thing. And use the run game to give the offensive line confidence more so than just getting yards on the ground. Special teams, they have a great unit there. Hines had two return touchdowns in one game, so my advice is just kick it out of the end zone every play. Don't tempt fate. If he's done it before, he can do it again. I mean, we have a great coverage unit, but it's just not worth it. You know, kick the ball deep in the end zone wherever possible, and let's just call it like that. Just like I said last game for us, not looking for any big returns, just looking for the returners to hold the ball and hand the ball to the refs after the play is over. Prediction for the game? Get your popcorn, bet the over in Vegas, and watch the Bengals win 37-34 and advance to the AFC Championship game. That'll do it for this episode. Next episode will be a review of the game against the Bills and a preview of the AFC Championship game with the Cincinnati Bengals versus whoever they want to bring on. And we're also going to welcome in some special guests as well. I'd like to thank @BengalsHighlights on Instagram, the best page out there. Really cool highlights, really cool music. Definitely something you should check out. Thank you for listening to the Unofficial Bengals Podcast. This is your host, Frank LaPlaca. And I'm a Bengals fan for life.
The Unofficial Bengals Podcast.